This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish. My colleague Robert Siegel is off today for the holiday, but we're going to return with him now to a thrilling day of yesteryear. Yesteryear being 5 years ago. That's right, it's a shameless rerun. And our excuse is the new Lone Ranger movie, which is open to mixed reviews. The old TV show, which aired in the 1950s, was a favorite of Robert's when he was a boy. So for our 2008 series, In Character, Robert marked the Lone Ranger's 75th anniversary.
Look up there, it's a head wall.
In 1874, six Texas Rangers were betrayed by a guide and ambushed at Bryant's Gap.
It's an ambush, men. Spread out and find cover, quick.
Riding on the canyon floor, they came under rifle fire from a gang of outlaws on the cliffs above. Five died, and the sixth was left for dead and would have died that day, but for an amazing coincidence. After the shooting was over, an Indian man happened upon the scene of the ambush.
Lie still. Me not hurt you.
The ranger who was wounded but still clinging to life had saved that Indian from outlaw raiders a few years earlier when the two were just boys.
Why, you Kemosabe.
Kemosabe? That sounds familiar.
The Indian recognized his boyhood companion, carried him to a nearby cave, and nursed him back to health.
The other rangers, Tonto, all dead?
Mm.
Including Captain Dan Reed, the ranger's own brother. The Indian did the subtraction.
You all alone now. Last man. You are a Lone Ranger.
Yes, Tonto. I am a Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger.
He has been the Lone Ranger ever since. On radio, in movies, in novels, on television, in comic books. His story has been embroidered, embellished, and rewritten. But he always wore a mask. He always pursued justice, and he never accepted praise or payment.
Are you silver? Away!
Well, my name is Fran Stryker Jr., and my father's name was Fran Stryker, and he was the creator and author of The Lone Ranger.
In 1933, Fran Stryker, a self-described hack writer, was in Buffalo, New York, writing radio scripts for, among other stations, WXYZ in Detroit.
And they were buying five programs a week from him. Some of them were a mystery series. Some of them were Secret Service series.
And the owner of WXYZ, George Trendle, wanted a Western. Fran Stryker started writing. And over the course of a dozen episodes, a character took shape, a paragon of virtue.
I'll shoot the wound, not the kill. A man must die. It's up to the law to decide that. Not the person behind a six-shooter.
May I offer you gentlemen a drink?
No, thanks. Man drinks that kind of medicine to forget something he doesn't want to remember.
The Lone Ranger always used dead-on perfect English. That's what George Trendle read the scripts for.
He didn't even have a hint of a Texas accent about him as he spoke.
Well, nobody's been west of Buffalo or Detroit either.
Who's there? Open the door, Sheriff.
A masked man.
Back inside.
You've got a lot of nerve.
Don't make a move for your guns.
My name is Gary Hoppenstand, and I am a professor of American Studies who specializes in popular culture studies, and I am also currently editor of the Journal of Popular Culture, which is the largest scholarly journal of its type in the world.
Professor Hoppenstand ranks the Lone Ranger among a handful of important iconic figures in American popular culture, a vigilante lawman who protects the criminal justice system by working outside it. A hero made for radio audiences of the Great Depression.
I reckon we ain't no choice but to sell out to this polecat and try and find new digging somewhere.
$150 is a lot of cash, Jim.
Don't you take it, Jim. What'll we do when the 150's gone? We won't have nothing then, not even this house and the claim.
In the 1930s, the perception was that there was a failure of government to protect the American people, and so this was a character masked who used vigilante techniques to basically protect those who can't help themselves. And so this was a character who found a decided audience experiencing those kinds of things in their daily lives while also having that wonderful escapist enjoyment as well.
Well, the Lone Ranger and Tonto, they're riding down the line, fixing everybody's troubles, everybody except mine.
For the first 10 episodes of The Lone Ranger, the ranger actually rode alone. This was before they cooked up the backstory of the ambush at Bryant's Gap. As writer Fran Stryker told his son Fran Jr., that posed a problem for creating dialogue.
The problem being that the Lone Ranger had nobody to talk to if he was a Lone Ranger. So they suggested that they create a sidekick for the Lone Ranger. Script 11 introduced Tonto, and he was developed solely for the purpose of giving the Lone Ranger somebody to talk to.
All right, Tonto. You'll be a lot of help. We'll ride together.
Me glad, Kemosabe. Me fight good for you.
Take cover, Tonto.
I always looked at the Lone Ranger as like your idealized white man, and Tonto as your idealized Native American.
Writer Mark Ellis compiled a fictional timeline of the Lone Ranger's life.
As a kid, my idea of a Native American was based on basically Tonto, who was a good person. He was very moral. He was very smart, even if he spoke rather broken English.
Me call you Kemosabe. It mean trusty scout.
If the Lone Ranger accepts the Indian as his closest companion, it's obvious to the child listener that great men have no racial or religious prejudice.
Fran Stryker Jr. says in all the Lone Ranger episodes, there is never a disparaging word about any minority group. Of course, what had sufficed as racial equality in 1933 could easily provoke cynicism by the time the show was on television in the 1950s or in reruns in the 60s. Again, Mark Ellis.
Bill Cosby used to do a routine where he could never understand why Lone Ranger would always send Tonto in the town for supplies and then would get beaten up.
And I'd always holler in the radio, Tonto, don't go to town. You know, they're going to beat you up again, man. You know, just one time. Tonto, yes, Kemosabe, you go to town. You go to hell, Kemosabe.
Just because, and they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
I'll hide my identity somehow.
You mean like mask?
That's it, Tonto. From now on, I'll wear a mask.
Why the mask? Well, the idea was that the Butch Cavendish gang, the bad guys who had killed his comrades in the ambush, shouldn't know that one of them had survived and was out to seek revenge.
And in order to keep his identity secret, He used a mask and never used his name so he could go after the gang. The mask, as the legend goes, was cut from his dead brother's vest.
That's Terry Salmonson, lifelong fan and collector of Lone Ranger memorabilia. Of course, that doesn't explain why he always wore the mask, even when he and Tonto were riding alone across the Texas wilderness.
Overcaution.
Overcaution.
No one is going to know I'm alive. I'm supposed to be dead, and I'm going to stay that way.
He wears a mask that is the very symbol of the outlaws that the Lone Rangers go after.
Professor Gary Hoppenstein.
I think what it plays into is the audience's sense of escapist fantasy. The idea is that in their imagination, all they need to do is don their own mask, and they too could have these sort of grand and exciting adventures where they're doing exciting and good things.
So who actually knew the Lone Ranger's face? Well, his nephew did, and of course Tonto did, and this may be surprising, but President Ulysses S. Grant did.
Mr. President?
Who are you? Who let you come in here with that mask on your face? Take it off if you want to speak to me.
Terry Salmonson explains this encounter.
President Grant summoned him to a railroad siding in St. Louis because of the actions of a particular group of individuals that were trying to carve out their own country, so to speak, in the West. And that started off a 64-episode series entitled The Legion of the Black Arrow. And President Grant requested that the Lone Ranger come in for a meeting to say, is there something we can do and how can you fight against it?
There.
You know, your face is just what I thought it would be. What I hoped it would be.
Thank you, sir.
The Lone Ranger was a patriot. In real life, too. Again, Fran Stryker Jr., son of the writer.
Interestingly, during World War II, my father was called to Washington by the War Department, and they had a favor. He had a number of Ranger programs where the Lone Ranger would help the cavalry out at the end of the program. And the War Department thought that it would be nice if the cavalry could help the Lone Ranger out. And this was their PR effort for the year, I guess. And Dad said, of course.
The adventure of Lone Ranger and Tonto, that lost idiot's rider. Ayo, Silver, away!
Something else about the Lone Ranger. He rode a white stallion named Silver. And his six-shooter fired silver bullets.
Gotta love the silver bullets. The silver bullets are genius.
That's novelist Michael Chabon.
Silver bullets will serve as sort of a symbol. Tonto suggested the idea. A symbol which means justice by law.
It didn't hurt that the Lone Ranger had inherited a silver mine. Writer Mark Ellis says these props were designed to be indelible in the mind's eye.
The silver bullets, the mask, and the white stallion silver, those were what was known, I guess, in the old days of radio as shiny things for the mind so that the imagination could latch on to and made it easier to visualize the characters and the places.
And people did. Time was, kids had Lone Ranger rings, hats, masks, Lone Ranger giveaways from cereal boxes. Novelist Michael Chabon says the charm still works.
My 4-year-old son and I just stumbled upon some books we have from the 1950s. We have 2 Lone Ranger golden books. And my son was just immediately rapt. There's something about the mask and the hat and the horse and the silver bullets and the faithful Indian friend. And there's something really powerful there in that character. I mean, there's some reason why the Lone Ranger continues to endure, even though he's far less visible now than he once was.
We never dreamed that this would become a legend when we were doing the show.
Fred Foy is 86. In 1948, he got the job at WXYZ in Detroit to be the announcer on The Lone Ranger, and he filled the same job on the TV show that followed.
And it's so beautiful to know that you had so many people who sat back and enjoyed your work, and I'm very flattered to hear that.
I was wondering if you could give us, up in the clear, a rendering of the opening.
The opening. Yes. Okay, and that includes the all of it. All right, let's see what happens here. A fiery horse with a speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo silver, the Lone Ranger. With his faithful Indian companion Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains led the fight for law and order in the early western United States. Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past comes the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again. Hi-yo, Silver! Hoi!
You have the magical power to make people feel they're 5 years old once again. So,
well, thank you.
That was announcer Fred Foy back in 2008. Foy died 3 years ago. Everyone else I mentioned is 5 years older now, including the Lone Ranger. He's 80.